Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 246. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how are you enjoying the postseason so far?
It's been awesome. You can't ask for much better than both games going to game seven now. As you're listening to this, we'll have an AL winner. And I would just love to see a Rangers D-backs World Series just for the sake of baseball. And I apologize if you're an Astros or Phillies fan, but just for the game, I think that would be really fun to see. It's not your traditional World Series, not someone that's been recently, the Phillies and Astros. Phillies or Astros have won recently. Phillies went last year. So I just think that thinking about the whole complexion of baseball, then I think it'd be pretty fun to see ultimately the D-backs and the Rangers go. So the Rangers have the lead right now. 3-1 as we are recording. The D-backs and Phillies will play game seven tomorrow or today as you're listening to this. So it's been a great postseason. We cannot complain at all about that.
No, yeah, it's been phenomenal getting game sevens in both of the league championship series. Absolutely can't fault that. Pitching matchup, kind of interesting. Actually, it's been two guys that, while they're not huge names, fought and Suarez have pitched pretty damn well here this postseason. So we'll see. I bet you they'll bring in Zach Wheeler in some way at some point in that game. But yeah, at this point, I don't really care. Obviously, I don't have a dog in a fight. And I will take any World Series. I obviously just love watching baseball. I think Major League Baseball is probably hoping for, you know, Houston and Philly. Obviously, that's probably the biggest draw. And I would like to see Harper. I love watching Harper and Schwarber. And that's a fun team. But I'll take anything. But it'd be fun to see who wins this game tonight here on Sunday, obviously. Or what's today? Monday. And then see who gets that NLCS win tomorrow on Tuesday. But we're going to talk some Arizona Fall League today. The other baseball that's going on right now, about, I don't even know, roughly halfway through the season, I think, give or take a little bit, maybe a little bit over halfway. So we figured we'd talk some standouts so far, who's hitting well and who's pitching well and what it all means. Before we do that, get the usual housekeeping out of the way. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm Eric Ross 04. shows at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty Prospect FYPD rankings. We're both doing team-by-team prospect rankings right now, AFL work, you know, a lot of fun stuff out there. So check out both of those platforms. All right, let's start off, Chris, though, with James Triantos from the Chicago Cubs organization. He is out with the Mesa Solar Sox and one of the, you know, maybe the hottest hitter right now in all of the AFL. He currently, I think, leads in OPS with 1290. He has 9 extra base hits in 13 games, slashing 431, 525, 765. Also has 6 steals as well, but there's a lot of guys stealing a lot of bags out there. That's not nothing new. I don't take, you know, reading too much in the stolen base numbers, but he is hitting very well. And with Triantos too, you know, he's a guy that you always knew he was going to be a good hitter. It's just, what else would he bring to the table? Like, how much power would he tap into? You know, how much speed would he bring to the table? That's kind of like, I think the question is, at least for me, with Triantos this season. And I'm not going to change my thought process on him, you know, because of a hot, was his 13 games right now, but What are your thoughts on Triantos long term? Like, do you think he's a big guy that can at least get this, you know, some sort of power speed lend that could be impactful for fantasy?
I honestly don't. I'm not fully buying the speed that we've seen. Now, there's no denying the contact at all. I mean, we've known that James Triantos is one of the better contact hitters in all of minor league baseball. And we've kind of seen that time and time again. But ultimately, where does he land with steals? I mean, he stole 16 bases this year. He's already stolen 6 in Arizona in 13 games. I just don't believe that he's going to be a big source of steals. The power is minimal. He hit 4 home runs across 350 plate appearances in 80 games. His peak was in 2022. He hit 7 home runs. I feel like this is more of a gap-to-gap power where we're going to see him hit a lot of doubles, even some triples, because he does have enough speed. And I sit here and say that he's not going to be a big stolen base source, but Triantos does have speed. Yep. But the contact is what you're looking at here. I mean, he ran an 83% contact rate this year. Like, the number held pretty steady all year. I just think this is what he's going to be. Like, he's semi-aggressive. He swings at a lot of pitches, but he puts a lot of balls in play. He runs pretty similar walk-to-strikeout rates. Like, we saw that all season. Like, he did that. He's struck out 11 times, which is a bit surprising in the AFL. All things considered, I mean, we're looking at a regular season in which he struck out 10.7% of the time and walked 10% of the time. So pretty substantial difference than seeing 11 strikeouts in his 13 games so far. But Triantos, very good contact hitter. I don't know. I mean, like, could he be a Nico Hoerner type?
I was literally going to say poor man's Nico Hoerner.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to have the speed or steal those bases, but I don't see why not. Like, in reality, like, I think that's a real possibility. Like, he could be a 10 home run, 20 stolen base guy with a high average. And that's what, I mean, until this year when Hoerner stole 40, that's pretty much what Horner's been.
Yeah. Or like a poor man's Whit Merrifield, poor man's Tommy Edman. I don't know. It's kind of somewhere in that range. I think there definitely is some fantasy value here moving forward. So obviously, the contact skills are there. The approach is there. This guy could hit 280, you know, 350 plus OBP, something like that. But at this point, I just don't know if I can even, I think 10 to 12 home runs is probably peak, unless he's, you know, really starts adding some bulk, starts driving the ball a bit more, which I don't really see that happening. Not like he has a ton of projection on the frame. So, yeah, I think like a 10, 20-plus guy with a solid average OBP, and that's definitely fantasy valuable, but I think just he's a decent prospect, but I think the overall upside is pretty capped here with Triantos. But moving over to going to be the other hottest hitter out there so far, and that's Jacob Marcy playing with Peoria, obviously out of the San Diego Padres system. This is a guy that had – I just finished my San Diego Padres top 40 prospects and my write up for him. I think I said something along the lines of, is this like the quietest, like 16 homer, 46 steal season you'll ever see in the minor leagues? It's like he was the only prospect in all of baseball this past year to have 15 plus home runs, 30 plus steals, and more walks than strikeouts. He had 98 walks, 97 strikeouts, overall slash 274, 413, 428. And he's another one where I don't really see a ton of power here. I see more power than what Triantos probably brings, but maybe he's like a 15, 16 homer type, but you know, there's solid speed there and the approach is pretty good as well. So this is a guy that could, you know, I think he's got to be in the top 100 conversation now in terms of overall prospect rankings. I'm still kind of tweaking my rankings, obviously, but I think he's definitely in that discussion now, Chris.
He's the, I'll be the contrary, and he'll be the easiest sell of any player this offseason of any prospect for me. And no knock on him at all. I mean, the performance was there. The AFL hype is only building, and the right. performance has been so good in the AFL that when you get everybody out there at first pitch, the hype's going to go insane on him. I'm not afraid, actually, but I do believe that you should cash out on him. I look at the underlying data and it's not good. I mean, we're looking at an average exit velocity of 83 miles an hour. And for reference, like only of every hitter in the major leagues, only Estre Ruiz would have had a lower average EV last year, a ninth percentile EV that's well under 199. That's, I think the power's like 20 to 30 grade. Like it's not good at all. And I think it's really been overplayed a bit by ideal launch angles and getting away with, you know, beating some bad pitches at the lower levels. And so I'm pretty out on Marcy. I put him at around 250 in my update, but I know he's going to be consensus top 100. He's been in that conversation. I've seen people talk about him as top 50 on social media.
I have too. Yep.
I can't get anywhere close to top 100 because I think that he's no different than Triantos. I mean, Triantos hits the ball way harder than Jacob Marcy does. And I don't know. I just don't see it here. Maybe I'll be completely wrong, but I'm cashing out everywhere. I've actually picked him up places just to sell because of how high people have right. boosted him up. And I just can't even fathom a top 50 ranking for him right now, given all the underlying data. It's just not supportive of, you know, the power that we've seen. So playing in good home ballparks, hitting the ball at some ideal launch angles that he's not going to be able to do against major league pitching. So for those reasons, like I'm just out because he doesn't have the speed that Estre. If you want to call him Estre Ruiz, like he doesn't have anywhere near that speed. Like
no,
even if he steals 30 bases, like how effective is that? And, you know, Ruiz was popular in a hype because he could steal 80 bases, but I don't think Marcy touches that. I don't think Marcy touches 15 home runs in the majors. I think he's a 10 home run bat at best. And that may be like generous. His frame's already pretty filled out. Like I don't see a lot of room to add power. Like you look at his frame, you look at his age. Like I just don't see much more power growth personally. And you know, it's possible. Like he could. I mean, if he ticks up from an 83 average EV to 86, then we're looking at a different story. But right now, we're looking at some of what would be among the, like, it'd be first percentile, like if he had a savant slider of hitters in Major League Baseball. And so I'm just not on board with this at all. And so I'm completely out and selling everywhere I can in dynasty leagues.
Yeah, just to clarify, I don't have him top 100. I have him currently at 158, and that's actually, I have him behind Triantos. I have Triantos at 148 right now. But yeah, I think I've had people, you know, I've seen people say top 50. Yeah, people ask me if he's top 50 right now. Yeah, I think he's definitely a sell for sure. I mean, I guess I'm a little bit higher on him than you are, obviously, with where we said we each have him ranked. But yeah, I don't think he's definitely, like, the perceived value has jumped the actual value. That is 100% agree with you there, no doubt about it. So I want to see how he finishes. If he finishes hot as well, he's going to be one of the more hyped name. And obviously, he's San Diego too. So, you know, gets a little bit of the Padres bump there, as most of them do. So it's a guy that could even maybe see some time in San Diego next year, maybe second half of the season. Got up to Double A near the end of the year for 16 games. So we'll see. Probably starts there again, but we could see him over the summer. And as he gets closer, if he hits well next year, I think that price tag will probably will jump to the top 50 if it hasn't already by then. But now next one here. So let's keep it on this Peoria team. A lot of a lot of fun names on the Peoria roster, obviously. And go with Kyle Manzardo, another name that's, you know, getting a lot of buzz. Once again, like the buzz obviously was huge in 2022, then a down 2023. You know, obviously had a lot of off the field family stuff that he was dealing with, but now Manzardo's kind of showing why that, you know, why the hype was there to begin with after 2022, you know, why, you know, he was ranked as highly as he was, because this is still a very, very good bat. So far in 13 games in the AFL, five doubles, five home runs, slashing 283, 367, 698. It's absolutely cranking the ball all over the field here, Chris. Obviously, you know, I think we can both easily agree that this guy's a buy low, but like, where do you have him right now in your prospect rankings? Like, is he still top 20 for you? Where do you have him at right now?
Yeah, this is the lowest point that I had Manzardo at 25, and that update was done probably the first week of the fall league. So he hadn't really fully put it back together yet. And I've never doubted the skill set when we look at Kyle Manzardo as a hitter. And he's dealt with a lot of tough things off the field this year that honestly any hitter would have probably struggled due to the mental just struggle of playing baseball with what was going on at home for Manzardo. And, you know, he's been absolutely stellar all AFL so far. He said he leads the league with five home runs. He's got five doubles. He's even got a triple, 14 RBI. He's just doing everything exceptionally well. And, you know, I think if anything, like, this is just Manzardo getting back to who he was in 2022 when we saw him break out and be that exceptional hitter. I think he's going to be the Cleveland opening day first baseman. So I really do believe that Manzardo has that potential to step in immediately and be that guy for Cleveland next year, as soon as April, like right out of spring training. I won't be surprised if they hold him down for a couple of weeks just for service time reasons, but the bat's ready. I know there's Josh Naylor there. I know there's several other guys, but I believe Manzardo can be the best of them. So I'm all in on Manzardo, and I think he's a great buy, not only in Dynasty to buy low, but also for redraft next year.
Totally agree there. All right, I think we got to place a little bit of who you got here with corner infield prospects. This is a good cluster of them kind of in this range of my rankings. All right, Chris, you got Kyle Manzardo or let's go Xavier Isaac?
Still Manzardo for me. Isaac has pretty scary contact rates. I mean, second half, he ran a contact rate of 65%. So power, obviously edge to Isaac, but Manzardo saw the power tick up this year where I don't think he's not going to be a zero there, and the contact skills are go from a 40 contact grade to a 70 contact grade, in my opinion. So it's Manzardo pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I figured you were still going there. This time I think will be a little more difficult. Let's go Manzardo or Tyler Locklear.
It's still Manzardo as well. I like Locklear. I actually have Locklear in that same tier as Isaac, so it's a step down from Manzardo. So still team Manzardo there.
All right. I'm saving this one for last. I knew this one would be the toughest for you. We're going Manzardo or Baltimore's Samuel Basalo.
Now, here's where we're getting close. I think that they are actually back-to-back in the rankings. I will take Manzardo just because of the more instant impact and the easy path to playing time. Fair. But ultimately, like, long-term outlook, I mean, Basayo's pretty impressive, honestly.
He might have a smidge more upside long-term, but yeah, I agree with your assessment there. I assume, like, I didn't go Kobe Mayo, Colt Keith. I assume they're comfortably ahead of Manzardo for you. So I didn't go with those.
Yeah,
two.
Yeah. So it's a 10 spot gap, probably.
Yeah, that's kind of what that's same with me. I have Mayo and Keith back to back 11, 12, and I have Manzardo at 22 right now. So, yeah, about the same here. All right. Another fun game of who you got. Let's keep rolling down the list here. Go with a couple Philadelphia names. They're probably the two, I don't want to say smallest names, but the least buzzy names so far we've talked about. It's Oliver Dunn and Gabriel Rincones Jr., and both from the Philadelphia Phillies org, playing with what team? Scottsdale. That's what it was. Scottsdale. What have you seen so far from Dunn and Rincones, Chris?
Well, they've both been impressive, and I feel like the Phillies prospects are making my write-ups pretty much every day, like at least one of them has. And, you know, I will say, like, I think Rincones is probably the prospect I'm most excited to see when we're out there, which is weird to say, but I didn't realize what a good year he had. Like, he's a toolsy guy at 15 home runs, stole 29 bags this year. While the numbers weren't super flashy, like, he still got the job done. And we forget, like, the Florida State League's, like, actually a bit of a ding in a way. Like, it's not always like a hitter's paradise. And so, like, those guys can seem to get dinged a bit from their performance, even though they can still be pretty good. And so that's kind of the case with, I mean, he put a 130 WRC plus there in the Florida State League, which pretty solid. And then he moved to high A and he still had a 104 WRC plus. So I'm excited to see what Rincones looks like in person. He's just a good athlete. He's getting the job done. He's got two home runs, a triple, five doubles. He's walking and striking out at a similar rate. 8 stolen bases as well. You know, not put a lot of stock in those, but his OPS is over 1,000, pretty much identical with Kyle Manzardo, who certainly has more power in the tank. So he's one that I'm more excited to see. Now, Oliver Dunn is one of the more fun stories of, you know, any hitter, where he's just doing things where, you know, you never even picture them doing that. And, you know, there's few hitters that I'm not familiar with, like, coming into the AFL, and he was one of them. Oliver Dunn and Liam Hicks were both hitters, and I'm like, okay, you know, not expecting anything of them. But yet, they've both just lit up the board like crazy. And it's kind of an interesting story because Oliver Dunn was a Yankees prospect for most of his career, and he was waived, and then he was selected on waivers by the Phillies, and spent the year in Double A this year. And, you know, people overlook it because his age, like, he turned 26 in September, but he was 25 the whole year. 505 plate appearances. He had 21 homers, stole 16 bags, and slashed 271, 396, and 506 slug. Despite being 25, that's pretty good. So looking at the profile of Oliver Dunn, it's like, okay, maybe there's something actually interesting here. And so, yeah, he's another one. Like, I need to get a good look at him. He's a smaller frame, but he's a player that I do think might be one of those guys that's like a utility bench bat in the major leagues, which is pretty good. Like, we're looking for major league hitters when we do this. And I think Dunn has the chance. Right. Like, it's not a zero chance that he does. And so Rincones, great athlete that I'm excited to see. And Dunn, just, wow, like, he's been awesome.
Yeah, I remember seeing Dunn, like, really briefly last year when he was in Double A Somerset. I don't remember what he did, but I just remember seeing him play last year. But yeah, he was really, like you said, he was waived. Like, he didn't have any success in the minor leagues until last year. And that was only in 36 games. Before that, like, in 2021, he hit .196. Now, in 2019, he hit .226 as a 21-year-old in, you know, the Appalachian League, which is now defunct, or at least not associated with Major League Baseball anymore, and then the Low A South Atlantic League. So he was old for there, not performing well. And, yeah, he was really off the map 100%. And then this year, kind of, boom, broke out, like you mentioned, 21-16, hit .271, .396, .506. Like, I don't see, like, a ton of upside here moving forward, but he's at least someone that, yeah, maybe he does play his way into, like, a utility bench spot where, you know, that in deeper leagues, you know, you got to have some of those guys on your team as well. Some of those deeper leagues, you're just looking for plate appearances, looking for innings. So he's definitely got that. He's should be at least kept on the radar in deeper leagues. I think that's kind of where I'm at with him right now. And then Rincones, he's a guy I'm looking forward to seeing next year. So I assume he'll be probably start the year in Double A Redding. So probably get to see him. Obviously, we'll try to see him out there in the AFL, but see him next year in Double A when they come up here to Portland. And yeah, he's just a really good athlete. He's pretty big frame too, but, like, in a good way. Like, you know, 6'3", like, 225 or so, very strong, very athletic guy, you know, former third round pick. And if the contact is there, you know, if he can improve the contact skills, keep the K rate in check, like, there's a kind of a fun little profile for fantasy here. And I think there's a little more power, not like a ton more power, but I think he could be a guy that kind of sniffs 20 home runs at peak, you know, maybe a guy that has 20, 25 steals. And we'll see where the average is at. But solid walk rate too. That's pretty good. I like to see that, but he's definitely the more intriguing name here for sure. Let's flip it over to the other team here in the state of Pennsylvania. Go over to the Pittsburgh Pirates org with Jace Bowen. Just turned 23 about a month and a half ago, early September. Had a pretty good year overall, most of which was in high A. Greensboro had, you know, about 8 games in double A Altoona as well. But overall, 23 home runs, 26 steals, 255, 327, 467 slash line. And so far out in the AFL, 359, 423, 625 with 9 extra base hits in 16 games, 3 home runs, and a pair of steals as well. Although he's been caught 3 times and struck out 17 times in 16 games. Chris, what's your take on Jace Bowen? Obviously had a nice little power speed blend this year, but some questions on the contact, doesn't walk a whole lot either. So it's kind of like a mixed bag profile for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw Bowen a good bit with Greensboro this year. And, you know, you look at the profiles and Jack Brannigan was always the one that stood out. Like Brannigan was awesome. Bowen was good. So not taking anything away from him there, but Bowen's been the one that's stolen the show in the AFL. You know, I really thought Brannigan would have a much better AFL, but Bowen's kind of done it all. She kind of read the stats. I mean, hitting for average, getting on base, slugging. He's got 3 home runs, 2 triples, 4 doubles, just doing all things especially well. And you look at the numbers are pretty good underlying as well. Like obviously being on that Salt River team, he's got a lot of games in the StatCast stadium and he's running a 90th percentile EV of 104.5 miles an hour. He's got a 60% hard hit rate, 19% barrel rate, which is crazy. Like he's just doing things exceptionally well. And so, you know, as much as I liked what I saw, like I feel like he's been one that's improved his stock too. And he's been arguably one of the top hitters in the league. And he's going to be one that I'm going to go back and compare. Like, is there anything different from like June to the AFL? Like, and when we see him next week, like I'm going to have to go back and see the film and just kind of compare notes and such just to kind of see, because he almost looks like a different hitter in a way. And that's not a knock on him at all. I mean, he had a great year, as you mentioned. He hit 23 home runs and he stole 20 bags too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 26. Yep.
Oh, yeah. So he's a 2020 guy and he had a near 800 OPS, but he's looked like an exceptionally better hitter in the fall league. So I'm excited to see him up in more personal in the fall league next week.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the guys I'm really excited to see, as is Rincones and a lot of these other names as well, Triantos. You know, a lot of these guys I don't really have a chance to see a whole lot. Though I'll probably see Bowen next year, though. Altoona's in the other division in the Eastern League, which we don't play as often anymore since COVID. So I still could check the schedule, see if we play it. If Altoona comes here or to New Hampshire. But, yeah, definitely he's on my list of guys I want to see out there in AFL for sure. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and we got about 7-8 more names, so we'll be right back.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. Welcome back. Let's go over to a couple of Colorado Rockies here. Sterling Thompson and Benny Montgomery playing on Salt River. Both are hitting well in terms of, you know, they're hitting for average, getting on base, but kind of have similar questions for both of them that, you know, where's the power at? Especially with Montgomery, because coming out of the draft when he was the, you know, top 10 pick back in 2021, I think a lot of the scouting reports were like pretty similar into, you know, saying that, all right, power's there, speed's there, very toolsy, but where's the hit tool? And he's been hitting fairly well in his minor league career, but that power just hasn't really been there. Like that toolsy, you know, that toolsiness, I don't know if that's a word, but I'm making it a word, you know, hasn't really been there. This year he had 10 home runs in 109 games. You know, 370 slug, 119 ISO. You know, he did hit two. You know, he only hit 251, and that was in the high A Spokane. And right now, hasn't really been hitting for much power. Has one home run out there in the AFL. Same thing with Sterling Thompson. You know, we know he's a pretty solid hitter. You know, hit 293 this year in 407 plate appearances between high A and double A. Hitting 354 with a near 500 OBP out in the fall league. Zero home runs. He did have 14. So I'm not saying he's a zero power guy. He does have some power, but I think that's the X factor for both these guys. Like, how much power do they ultimately hit for? And especially with Montgomery, because I think Thompson's more polished than Montgomery is. Like, that's easy to say. So we'll start with Montgomery, Chris. Like, how do you, like, after what you've seen the last few years from Montgomery since he was drafted, like, what's your long-term outlook on this guy? Do you still think that he's still like kind of like a tweak or two away from unlocking all that upside that, you know, scouts and, you know, all of us fantasy hounds were drooling on a couple years ago? Or is he kind of, has your outlook changed on him?
He's a tough eval, honestly, where the performance has been obviously very good for Benny Montgomery. And you hope that this is a catalyst for him to move forward into 2024 and take that next step. But ultimately, like, the contact rates have been way subpar, and that's really held him back from getting to the tools. I mean, sub 70% contact rate this year. It dipped to 65% in the second half. You look and he had a 700 OPS the entire season. Like, those numbers just don't scream like top prospect at all. But Montgomery's flipped the switch a little bit, and he's obviously been a much better hitter than I think anybody expected coming out here. And he's just, he got off to a slow start and he's kept hitting, he hit some more. And, you know, while you mentioned the power's not there, it's a major singles profile. He's got 19 hits, two doubles, a triple, and a home run. Some of his high end exit velocities are actually pretty good, where, you know, he's got a 105.5 mile an hour, 90th percentile EV, which is really good. And I know we're talking a 30 batted ball sample, but that's still solid, a 50% hard hit rate. The problem is that he just hits the ball on the ground too often. He needs to get better angles. Like, you even look, like, I've watched several games, and like, his double against Tiedemann was literally just a ground ball chopper down the first baseline that just got past the first baseman and turned, it was scored a double. So it's like, okay, you know, it's triple, like, similar stuff. And so it's been a profile that, like, I just want to see him, like, lift the ball a little bit. He made a swing change, like, last year, if I'm not mistaken. And I really thought he would unlock more, but he still hasn't. So, you know, I think that I wouldn't say his stock's moved up like that much, because it's a hitter that we expect should, like, hit well out here. But I still need to see more of him lifting the ball and actually getting to game power before I say, like, I'm going to make a big move on Benny Montgomery, despite the performance being good in the AFL so far.
Yeah, it's like him and Zach Veen are two of the harder guys for me to rank at this point. Because obviously, like, the upside's there. Like, they've shown tools at some point, but they just have never even kind of close put it together. Obviously, Veen's was running wild, which helped. But in terms of just at the plate, it's been kind of, yeah, underwhelming. And obviously, too many ground balls for Montgomery. And with Thompson, too, I'm still, like, Thompson's a back-end top 100 guy for me. I think he's going to be one of those guys that never stands out in any one area, but a guy that can, you know, provide a solid average in OBP, you know, maybe hit you 15 to 18 home runs, steal probably a similar amount of bags. So be, you know, like a 270, 15, 15 guy, something like that. See where he ends up on the diamonds, play some second, some third, some outfield, you know, mostly third, but we'll see where he ends up there. But I think he's going to be a guy that, I think he's a little bit undervalued just because he's one of those guys that doesn't have a standout tool, but I still have him back in top 100. Where do you have him, Chris?
Yeah, no, I think he's an easy top 100 guy at this point. Like, he does a lot of things well. Maybe, not, like you said, not stand out in any one area, but he does make good contact. Like, he's hitting the ball hard, especially out here in the fall league. So those things are encouraging. And, you know, with Sterling Thompson, like, I guess you look and say, like, how do we project him long term? Like, what is the the future outlook here. And I think that this is a very productive player, one, because you look and he's going to play his home games in Coors Field and he makes so much contact. Like, that's obviously a significant part of his game. Like, I think there's power here. You look at his 6'4", 200-pound frame that's geared for power. He has decent speed. Like, he moves well for his size, too. And ultimately, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Thompson hits 280 with 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. Maybe he doesn't get there in speed. Maybe that's a little high end for speed. But even if he steals 10, like, still a pretty usable player, especially because I think that he will run high OBPs as well, given the plate discipline and the skills. So, yeah, I'm fairly in. Like, I think he's like a top 75 to 100 type prospect at this point.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. I'm right there with you. Right, moving over to a pair of Blue Jays farmhands here, one hitter, one pitcher. Start on the hitting side with a guy that I think might challenge Vinny P for, like, just the best Italian name in baseball, and that's Damiano Palmigiani. I hope I'm saying that right. I think I am. But, you know, this is a guy that had another guy that had a pretty good year that didn't really get, you know, a lot of love for it. You know, in 128 games between AA and AAA, 108 of those in AA New Hampshire. I saw him a few times in those games. / 255, 365, 478, 33 doubles, 23 home runs, added 7 steals as well. Walk rate well over 10%, but also had 153 strikeouts in those 128 games. And then out in the AFL, hitting 286, 409, 531, 3 doubles, and 3 home runs so far in 14 games for Surprise. Now, he's one where, you know, I think there's, I don't know, the contact skills are not terrible, but not good either. I think maybe they're below average, but I think just decent. Again, nothing stands out here, even the power. I think, you know, maybe it's above average power. I wouldn't say it's more than that. So long term, I'm still, well, he's moved up my rankings because I think I underranked him this year. He's one where I still don't rank him too highly. So I just don't know if I project him as like a full-time starter long term. Maybe I'm being a little harsh. No, I want to hear your thoughts though, Chris. Where are you at on Palmigiani right now?
I'll toot my horn a little bit because I projected him to be the Blue Jays breakout prospect this year. I didn't think he would, you know, really do this kind of stuff. And he had a great year. It's much better OBP asset than yes, average.
For sure.
He hit 23 home runs and 840 OPS. I mean, you mentioned the walk. Like, he walks 13% of the time, 27% K. He actually makes decent contact. It did trend the wrong direction as he moved up levels. He finished the year with a 72% contact rate. So that's like right at minor league average. Obviously, you need to take that step up to be major league average. The exit velocity is pretty solid all around. Like, I do think we're looking at above average to plus power potential here. The high-end exit velocities being good, meaning he can get to those home runs. He's hitting the ball hard consistently. He gets nice loft in his swing, hitting for like ideal launch angles. Yeah, again, like, I don't know where he lands because the problem is this Toronto infield is stacked and will be for a long time. So that's kind of my question of how does he fit the puzzle? I'm not sure that they're going to be confident enough in him to not re-sign Matt Chapman this offseason and to go with Palmigiani at third base. It doesn't really make sense to me. And I think he could get reps there. Like, Vlad's at first. You've got Bo at short. There are question marks. Like, if Chapman does not re-sign, who goes to third? Do they go out and get somebody? Do they go internally? Like, you've got Orelvis Martinez playing second base right now in the Dominican Winter League. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see what the Blue Jays decide they want to do, but I have a hard time believing that they're trotting out Palmigiani. Despite he's going to be 24 next year, early on, I think they're going to give somebody else a run and see where it goes. They may not go get an elite third baseman. They may re-sign Chapman, and this may all be a moot point. But
right.
Ultimately, I think that you're looking at an average field of hit, which I don't think he's gotten the credit for. I think he's got above average game power. You know, he's not going to be an asset in speed at all. I know he stole 7 bases this year, but I'm not looking at being any sort of asset there. But most likely case is that he starts the year in AAA, spends half the year there, and gets some reps in Toronto near the All-Star break probably. But ultimately, like, fitting the puzzle is an important part of it. And while I love the Parmigiani profile, I'm just not sure where the fit is long term.
Yeah. Though he could take over for that bum at first base. I mean, I mean, you know, sub 800 OPS this year, kind of, man.
Not good.
No, I'm not good. No, obviously I'm joking. But yeah, that is the question. Like, where does he fit long term? That's really the question for really any Toronto infield prospect coming up right now. Aurelvis, Addison Barger, really anybody coming up. Like, where do they fit? And is it with this organization moving forward? Like you mentioned, like this, most of this infield outside of, you know, maybe third base is locked up, you know, for foreseeable future. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I think he's definitely got his risen up rankings. A guy that was, you know, probably underranked, you know, near the end of the season, including myself. I'm guilty of that 100% and admit that. But yeah, I think it's solid bat there for sure. And moving over to the pitcher, Ricky Tiedemann, obviously a much bigger name, and we could even, you know, loop in Jackson Jobe here because, you know, their showdown on, I think it was Saturday or no, Friday night. Yep. Was their last, unfortunately. I mean, I've seen Tiedemann twice. Hopefully I'll see Jobe next year, but I was obviously, I think Chris and I and everyone else going out there was hoping to see, you know, at least an inning or two from them in like the Fall Stars game or something like that. But alas, they are both done. Both pitched very well, you know, and they both had four starts. For Jobe, 287 ERA, 19 Ks to 5 walks and 15 and 2/3 innings. Tiedemann at 18 innings in his four starts. So he went 5 innings and three of those outings, which was very encouraging. Had 23 Ks to 8 walks in those 18 innings. And kind of Tiedemann kind of was looking similar to kind of what we saw from him in the season, at least in my looks and watching him on video, where obviously the stuff is really good. Like, there's no doubt in that the stuff is very good, like, you know, frontline starter stuff, but still just kind of inconsistent with it. You know, had the 8 walks and 18 innings. And as Chris Welsh kind of pointed out on Twitter that he picked up, which is a great thing to pick up on, that Tiedemann's, you know, kind of release height is different on his breaking, his off-speed pitches as opposed to his fastball. And maybe hitters are picking that up. I mean, I assume they are. If Welsh is, you know, Welsh is a great, it's great eyes, but if Welsh is picking it up from the stands, I think some of these hitters are as well. But the fact that he's still, that kind of two things come to mind for that. A, that this shows like how talented he is, that he was still able to succeed even through that. And B, like, how does he kind of, him in Toronto, how do they correct that going into 2024? Obviously, all the upset in the world, but I think 2024 is going to be a really kind of big year for him. Like, all right, is he going to be that frontline guy? Can he stay healthy? Can he, you know, get the command back in check? Or is he going to, you know, is that bullpen risk of all the people beating that drum, is that going to get louder and louder? So I think it's going to be a really big year for Tiedemann in 2024. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me is that Tiedemann was able to pitch innings and go deep into starts.
Yep.
He had not pitched more than 4 innings in all this year. Like, 4 was his max. You had to go back to July of 2022 to find a 5-inning start. He consistently pitched 75 pitches. He consistently pitched 5 innings. And I think that is the most telling thing. Even if the performance wasn't good, like, I'd be thrilled with that because we saw him look healthy. If Ricky Tiedemann is healthy in spring training, he's going to be in the Blue Jays opening day rotation. With all the health issues he's had in the past, no need to waste bullets. Like, this guy's talented enough.
Yep.
He's going to be in Toronto's rotation right out of spring training if health permits. And we hope it does because we saw the talent level. And like you mentioned, even though he was tipping pitches, and Savant confirmed it, like, you know, in the start in Salt River Field on Friday, like, Savant, I tweeted out the picture of it where it's a sizable gap between yep. the sweeper and the fastball and from a release height standpoint, but he's still getting things done. He's backdooring right-handed batters with the sweeper, like hitting the outer half of the plate. It's like fooling them. He's throwing it front door to lefties and just completely throwing them off. The changeup's nasty. His misses aren't over the heart of the plate. Like, he's missing off the plate, which is great. And while, yeah, there were some walk issues, like, I'll take Ricky Tiedemann missing there all day long because the stuff's so good and it played up. And we saw that. The sweeper is absolutely devastating. And we know the arsenal is incredible, top to bottom. no questioning that. But I think the biggest thing is that he proved health. He stayed healthy. He pitched five innings. He threw 75 pitches start after start, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, absolutely, because there was a lot of concerns, and I've been one that anytime someone would bring up, oh, bullpen risk, I would kind of poo-poo it, like, no, no way. And I'm still like, I think it's still like sub 10% chance, but it was kind of getting a bit concerning this year when, you know, the innings weren't there, the command wasn't there, just wildly inconsistent for him, even with the phenomenal stuff. But yeah, he's still no doubt top five pitching prospect. He's still in my top three overall. And I have no, you know, unless he comes out and this has more of these issues in 2024, like, yeah, I think he's going to be staying there until he graduates off my list. Like, I'm very, very high on Tiedemann, always have been. So, and with Jackson Jobe, obviously he pitched very well. And I don't think enough is being talked about, like, how good Jackson Jobe was this year. I don't know why it doesn't get, I mean, he gets talked about, but not nearly enough. Like, this guy, as a 20-year-old getting up to double A, had only 6 walks in 16 starts, 84 strikeouts to 6 walks. Like, that is just ridiculous. And, you know, he had 3 of those in his first 6 outings in 16 innings in low A Lakeland, and then only 3 more in 40 innings, 8 starts for high A West Michigan. I mean, obviously the stuff is really, really good, and that gets talked about. But I don't think enough gets talked about, like, how polished, how advanced, like, how good the feel is, how good the command and control is for Jackson Jobe, where he has a pretty high, I know it's pitching prospect, but has a pretty high floor in terms of kind of the, compared to the other pitching prospects and kind of like in this elite tier. So, I mean, Jobe, again, he's a no doubt top 3 pitching prospect for me, and I don't know why he's not universally there.
He's my number 1 pitching prospect. I think that
he's number 2 for me right now.
Yeah, the arsenal, spectacular, top to bottom. He did everything that you want to see, and yeah, I could care less that he allowed 3 earned runs the other night. Like, whatever. Like, right. You know, we're not looking for those kind of things in the AFL. And you look at what Jobe did start over start, and it was just impressive stuff. You know, you look at what Tiedemann did, it was great. What Jobe did, it was great. Like, I would have cared more if they struggled. Like, they did what I expected them to do. The funny thing is, Jobe walked 5 batters in 15 innings, which was nearly what he did in the minors this year. Right. But let's think about this. Who's his home team? Salt River. Every start at Salt River. What stadium uses the automatic ball strike system? Salt River. So, again, I'm not like putting a lot of stock in the walks. Like, oh, he's back to being less command pitcher, whatever. No, I'm not. Like, Jobe's arsenal, top to bottom, extremely good. The fastball, incredible. The changeup, devastating. Slider, great pitch. Cutter, all those things make Jackson Jobe the best pitching prospect in baseball, in my opinion. So I think he did exactly what you'd expect. Would have loved to see him live, but he did everything that I wanted to see. So I'm thrilled with what Jackson Jobe did.
Absolutely. And I'm just fingers crossed now that I can see him, you know, early next year at double A, because I get a hunch that he's probably not going to be at double A for much of next year. And I think they do come double A Erie. I think they do come here or to New Hampshire before the end of May. So I double check on that, but I'm just really hoping I get to see him lie at least for 1 start next year. We shall see. All right, we got 3 more pitchers here to talk about. We got DJ Hurst from the Washington Nationals, Emiliano Teodoro from the Texas Rangers, and Davis Daniel from the Los Angeles Angels. Let's start with DJ Hurst, Chris. Former Cubs prospect, went over to the National system this past year and really looked good after the trade, which is kind of the opposite of a lot of the other guys that have gone there in that system after trades. But in 8 starts for double A Harrisburg, 2.55 ERA, 1.13 whip, and in 14 starts in the Cubs org in the Southern League for Tennessee, the Smokies, before the trade. You know, it wasn't terrible, but 3.97 ERA, 1.42 whip. You know, obviously it was walking a ton of guys, and that's still an issue. You know, even within those 8 starts for Harrisburg, he still had 20 walks and 35 and a third innings. And so far out in the AFL, 6 in 11 innings. So that's still kind of you know, the red flag, the concern in this profile, but definitely was, because he was a guy that was kind of not completely off my radar, or I wasn't, you know, out on, but he was definitely like slowly just dropping down my rankings. But, you know, the way he's performed, you know, to end the season and then looking pretty decent out in the AFL as well, that fall stopped and he's kind of been ticking back up. And I assume that's probably the case for you as well, Chris.
Yeah, it's been great to see with hers. You know, like you mentioned, looked like a different pitcher. He went from, you know, throwing 59 innings in with the Cubs in Double A. And the interesting thing is that was with the tacky ball. So it really didn't play to his advantage that much, which is surprising. You know, he posted a 1.42 whip, a 3.97 ERA, which is fine. Struck out 30% of hitters, but then he jumps over to Washington. And over 35 innings, he had a 2.55 ERA backed by a 2.60 FIP. He struck out 36% of hitters. Walk's still an issue, 13.5%. So he's got to get that corrected. And I am afraid that that keeps her as a reliever for his career. Just the fact that he can't get that walk rate down. It's been incredibly high pretty much his entire career. And so I have some legit concerns about, you know, what we'll see out of him ultimately. So, you know, at the end of the day, I love the arsenal, love the profile. Surprisingly, like, he doesn't like blow anybody away. Like, you look at the strikeout rates, like his fastball is like 92. Like, it's nothing spectacular, but right, he just gets the job done time after time. The changeup's nasty, mixes the slider. And so, yeah, I like hers. His stock's moved up, especially after what we saw with Washington. But I'm scared to go too high because just the command issues.
Yeah, same here. I've been, and that was the big reason why I was, you know, fading him a bit, were just the command and control issues. I thought he was going to be, you know, more of a bullpen arm, and even there, kind of where did he fit in the bullpen picture? Like, was he a guy that could maybe get you some saves or holds, or is he a guy more so pitching like the sixth inning or so? Kind of wasn't sure, like, where he would, what his role would be moving forward. So that's kind of why he was turning down for me. And I just feel like I don't still have him ranked highly. See, I'm going to guess in the 250 range. Let me pull it up, and that's not how you spell his name. It's with an H, not a J. There we go. Even lower, I'm at 310 right now. I'll probably move him up before, you know, my next update comes out after I finish all my team up prospect rankings. But yeah, I still have those concerns. Maybe he's a, you know, number four starter, but I don't see like the upside for, you know, much more than that. Any, you know, we'll end with the more exciting of the last two arms, but real quick on Davis Daniel, do you have any intrigue there? Obviously, you know, came up for the Angels for a little bit this year at 12 and a third innings over three appearances, walked as many as he struck out, 9-9, but did have, you know, a K rate a little bit above 27% in this minor league career, a little bit older, 26. Any intrigue there for you, Chris?
Honestly, not really. I mean, yeah, you know, he had that big 10 strikeout game earlier in the AFL, but I'm just, this guy should come out here and dominate. Like, he's beating up on these hitters that don't have the kind of experience that he does. I mean,
right,
as you mentioned, like, he's 26. Yeah, he turned 26. He's pitched in the major leagues. Like, yeah, this is kind of to be expected with him. Now, I don't know. I mean, like, he's fine, and I'm sure that the Angels are going to give him reps because I don't know who else are going to give reps to. They completely tear down this team this offseason, depending on what they do with Trout. But yeah, Davis Daniel does not interest me much at all for Dynasty.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I mean, he leads the AFL in K's right now, but that's, yeah, I just threw him on here just because he was performing well and figured he at least deserved at least a shout. But yeah, I don't have really super deep leagues. That's about it for him. But this last guy, Emiliano Teodo, from the Texas Rangers org, I know you've seen him, Chris, and obviously, and the other Chris, or one of the other Chris's, Chris Welsh, tweeted about him a few hours ago. His live look out there, he was hitting 102 with some mid 80s sliders, and this guy, he's absolutely dominated out there. You know, four appearances, six innings total. Only given up one hit and one walk, zero runs, struck out 12 of the 20 batters he faced, which is 60%. Obviously, it's only six innings, but This guy has been absolutely dominant. I think we both kind of said throughout the season, especially you after your live looks, Chris, that you know probably the bullpen was a more distinct possibility for him in terms of his long-term role. But I think he could be, he obviously has the stuff to be a very, very good lead inning guy and a guy that could still carve out some pretty solid fantasy value even in a bullpen role.
Yeah, Teoto is the most electric pitcher that I've seen this year. We're talking 102 on the fastball. Still in a 94-mile-an-hour changeup. The slider, mid to upper 80s. And hitters just can't catch up. He's got pretty decent command, too, which is the interesting thing. The question is, can he fit in a starter's role? And I ultimately think that's a possibility. I'm not ruling that out. I think he's better suited for the bullpen. I'll absolutely say that. But, 12% walk rate this year, not the most ideal. He misses so many bats. He's pretty efficient. He throws enough strikes where it's a possibility that I'm not ruling out him as a starter. But I just think Teoto could be just an insane, insane bullpen option. He's got the stuff. No questions asked. So, the performance in the AFL comes to no surprise at all, considering, he's averaging, two strikeouts an inning so far? Just ridiculous stuff. He's not allowed a run so far in seven innings. He's got two saves. He's allowed one hit and one walk. So, we're talking about a 0.29 whip, a 0.045 batting average against. Emiliano Teoto is somebody that the Rangers should be very excited about. He could pitch out of that bullpen in the World Series if they make it. He's that good.
And as of now, I don't want to jinx it, obviously, but they are up 8-2 now as we go into the bottom of the fourth of that game. So Houston's got some work to do over the final, 5.5 innings of this game. We'll see. Obviously, you'll know how the outcome after, by the time you listen to this, but we're going to go watch the rest of that and get out of here. That was a nice little AFL recap for the first half. We'll probably have another AFL episode when we're out there. And, just a little over a week now. And when you're listening to this, we'll be 8 days out from Chris and I getting out there on the 1st of November. Looks like we got 5 games plus the Fall Stars and the Derby. So be a fun several days, obviously, with First Pitch Arizona, seeing everybody, all the panels and everything else goes along with that. So looking forward to that. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.